Well, for Wilde, the value of literature and story lay most of all in imaginative and emotional freedom, which meant for him ultimately leaving things up to the reader. Literature for Wilde was in this respect a form of self-discovery. He resisted the idea that literature or story was some form of coded or clandestine expression of the writer's own life or philosophy or views. And he's quite explicit to this to one admirer of his first volume of fairy tales, who wrote in admiration of his story, The Nightingale and the Rose. Wilde replied to him, "I did not start with an idea and clothe it in form, but began with a form and strove to make it beautiful enough to have many secrets and many meanings." Wilde strenuously resisted biographical readings of his work. Clearly, this had a self-protective dimension to it. Critics, for example, read The Portrait of Mr. W.H. and indeed his novel, Dorian Gray, as a clandestine revelation of Wilde's own secret homosexual life. That tendency continues today. Many present-day critics see it as their job to unearth the clandestine homosexual meaning of all his writings, even his fairy tales, which are read for the homosexual subtext. For example, the swallow's transference of love from the female reed to the male prince in The Happy Prince is seen as an encoded inscription of same-sex desire. Such readings are interesting. They're not invalid or illegitimate. But Wilde himself resisted biographical interpretation because it spared readers from having to implicate themselves in the narrative. Significantly in this respect, his story, The Portrait of Mr. W.H., has reading and interpretation as its central motif. It is in many respects one of the most challenging of Wilde's short stories. Wilde constructs the story around the scholarly riddle of the mysterious Mr. W.H. to whom Shakespeare dedicated his sonnets. In the story, while three main characters, male characters, are seduced in turn by the theory that Mr. W.H. is in fact a boy actor called Willie Hughes, with whom Shakespeare was in love. And much of the story involves the narrator decoding within the sonnets the name and presence of Willie Hughes. Wilde's own emotional investment in the story is evident in the extensive additions he made to the story between 1889, its first publication, and 1893, when he planned to bring it out again in a book-length version. In fact, the manuscript of the extended version disappeared from the offices of his publisher at the times of the trial. It was reported to have been returned to Wilde's house in Tite Street, but it never appeared. And then it resurfaced mysteriously in America 25 years later. The full text was published there in 1921. And although the magazine version, the first version, is preferred as, more strictly speaking, a short story rather than a work of literary criticism, the expanded version contains details that add to our understanding of Wilde's intentions. In particular, the narrator's account of the Italian Renaissance philosopher Massilio Ficino's translation of Plato's dialogue, The Symposium, provides an important key to the composition of the story. The suggestion is of a long tradition venerating Platonic love between men that stretches from the ancient world to modern times. The story itself, in effect, takes its place, Wilde's story that is, in a tradition of textual transmission that breaks the silences and taboos surrounding a love that, in Wilde's day at least, dared not speak its name. It's very interesting to examine that extended manuscript version, which is now today at the Rosenbach Library in Philadelphia, because we can see the revisions that Wilde made to the manuscript before its intended publication, And to some extent, they conform to the kinds of revisions he was making to Dorian Gray about the same time. In particular, we see, while tuning down and excising references to physical expressions of love between men that might be deemed to be too explicit. For example, the god of his idolatry, Shakespeare's view of Willie Hughes, is tuned down to his friend. The expression Shakespeare's great love is tuned down to this noble friendship. Now, one could see those elisions, as it were, those alterations, as being a submission to censorships and taboo, of Wilde, in a sense, being pragmatic. He wanted to avoid offending public morals. But at the same time, they're also an expression of Wilde's resistance to vulgar and merely physical interpretations of love between men. Again, it confirms or conforms to that idea of a tradition venerating a noble love between men stretching from the ancient world to modern times. In other words, it's elevating the love between men to the same status as heterosexual love, and indeed elevating it beyond that. At the very end of the portrait of Mr. W.H., the question of whether that ideal or idea will prove malign or benign, liberating or destructive, is left somewhat undecided. The narrator clearly recognizes the danger. He confesses at the close that he did not care to tell his friends the true history of the forged painting of Mr. W.H. that hangs in his library. In a final ironic twist, however, the narrative itself carries that influence into the future and into the minds of the reader.